I know that, for instance, I'm in a situation where I'm relating very largely with men, and I'm discovering how much I want to be a giving, loving, nurturing person. And it's something that I'm trying to develop for myself, and I see how our culture has prevented me from discovering that part of myself. But I don't think that all men are like that, basically, and nor do I think that all women are like that.
Well, to some extent, I've had some of those same experiences, Ron, because I've always related to women, but I was very much into role play, and I was playing the butch role. So I knew what the experience was to of always being the taker, of accepting the nurturing, but not returning it, you know. And so I've found out, since I've, you know, outgrown my role playing, you know, what a joy it can be to be a giving person, to have an equal kind of relationship, you know.
But do you find that perhaps the way you can give as a person is perhaps not exactly the way some other women can give? I mean, you talk about being thoughtful, being loving. I see that in some women, and I see a certain other kind of thing in other women, a kind of strength, a kind of protectiveness, a kind of leadership quality that may not be the same thing. And I'm just wondering whether women, as they get together, are beginning to see not just the similarities between women, but the differences between them that have been pushed aside in our society.
I think a lot of women are forced to give. You know, we're conditioned to give. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of women give in ways that they wouldn't naturally give. And part of the thing of women getting together is to start stripping away those old ways of giving, like always be waiting at the door with your slippers kind of thing, and getting into things that are more meaningful to them and that they want to give. We all can only give exactly what we want. We don't feel like giving all the time. We feel like taking sometimes. Sometimes we just feel like being alone. And that's the unheard of sin for a woman. I think, you know, nobody has yet listened to a room of one's own. I really don't. Even women together, females bonding, do not allow each other the space to be together and yet to be alone when they need to. I think women, at this time, I know I have a feeling and a need to be with someone, but I also have this great yearning to be alone and still know that I haven't isolated myself from my community, that I still have people who love me and who care about me, and that it's not one of those things that as soon as I walk out of my door, everyone has to come up and love me, but that it's a normal thing to want to be alone, you know, that it's a natural thing, and that it's something everybody else, I think, has a feeling for, too.
Has this kind of thing, this kind of discovery of what you need for yourself, come to you more now that you've, you know, is this something that you've discovered about yourself?
Everything's come to me more now since I've been bonding with women. I really, you know, I think I was saying it before, we were trying to pinpoint how our lives have changed or what particular thing in our life has changed, and my whole life has changed. There is nothing that is the same. I think differently. I have a wonderful quote from my myth-making article by Emily Culpepper, I believe it is.
In the second wave,
which almost every lesbian in the world should have. Volume 4, number 1. Wonderful. It has something, a quote from Phyllis Chesler. I was going to use this as my rationale, which I couldn't think of one before, on myth-making. But this is Barbara Sterrett, and on a fantasy about future possibilities. I'm an old woman with a deck of cards, a witch, an Amazon, a Gorgon, a seer, a clairvoyant, a poet. I have visions of becoming and I dream in female. Mm. that's really nice, and that's something I'm starting to do because I can't say I dream in female now, but I'm starting to go toward that point. And it's very pleasurable. I can't imagine ever being like I was again, though I know I am the same person, yet I did a lot of things that were more or less socially acceptable because of the role that I thought I had to play, because I was just as locked into my role as you were in yours.
I can say about that Ron had asked me this before, so I tried really to decide what concrete changes beyond the kind of changes that you're talking about, and I heard a quote that I thought was interesting. I'm becoming the person I wanted to marry, which has to do with boldness and a kind of confidence and resourcefulness that I wanted to find in another person that I'm really finding in myself. And besides that, in more concrete terms, sexually, the discoveries I've made about myself, I don't know how I ever would have made with men. I knew lots of men before I came out about 4 years ago. And my sense of my own sexuality now, and from very technical ways to very ways that would be difficult to describe, is so much more profound. And I was thinking today that I have at least 30, if not 40 or 50 more years of sexuality left, and that my sexuality really only began 4 years ago, and that's a very exciting concept to me. Before, and also very concrete terms, I used to feel very ugly, and I occasionally felt attractive, and now I feel beautiful almost all the time and occasionally ugly. I never thought of myself as a creative person before. I was very resistant to thinking about myself as a creative person, and now I very much conceive of myself as an artist in all kinds of ways. Before, I used to get my identity from my job very strongly and from whatever my male lover status was. I still have a lot of identity problems, but I'm much more moving toward getting my identity from, one, my own accomplishments. Even if they're not recognized, I can get a source of strength from my accomplishments and be convinced that I'm doing something right, even if the world isn't, or even the lesbian community doesn't approve of some of my theories or actions or politics. And until recently, I still tried to get a lot of identity from lover relationships with women. And that was deadly. And I'm moving more and more away from that, although I still have some problems with that, that I see a light at the end of the tunnel, I think, in achieving my full sense of identity fully from myself.
Well, when you talk about accomplishment, I mean, one of the things that seems to me to be the one of the cornerstones of the patriarchal culture is that one's identity usually is measured by one's accomplishments, one's success in some kind of competitive male world. And I see a lot of women who are, moving into that world headlong and adopting, it seems to me at least, the same kinds of success-oriented notions of who they are. I wonder if that's true for you or any of you, and whether that's something.
We're not exactly sex-oriented. Success-oriented.
I'm just wondering whether the kinds of things that women are discovering are past that. What are accomplishments in a real world that you'd like to find for yourselves, rather than the kinds of accomplishments that we think of in the current culture?
I think if I can be a nurturing person, that's a considerable accomplishment. I'm no longer very interested in success in the patriarchal terms. I know the women that you're speaking of, and I hope that it's a process for them too, although we have had long discussions about what kind of skills do women need to gain I keep thinking of the Freudian question about what do women want, and the question I came up with, the answer I came up recently, is that we want the world back, that we once had very different positions in this world, and that we were the guides of civilization, and that I want to become a guide of the civilization again, and that there are certain skills I need, and I'll go into the patriarchy for those, but that success in patriarchal terms is very ugly to me now. I don't want to be a bank president anymore. I don't want to be president of an advertising agency anymore. I find that very life negative, so that anything I do that calls forth courage from me and courage that's oriented toward life is an accomplishment. Mm-hmm. And anything that is not in that direction is a backslide or something like that, which I have all the time. But that's how I would register my progress and my success and in how authentic I can become. I think it was in Nightwood that somebody says, one's life is particularly one's own. Juna Barnes had said, one's life is particularly one's own when one has invented it. And every time I invent something new about my life that seems authentic to me, that is an extraordinary success.
Right.
Do you feel the same way? I mean,
I feel very much like that. I think one of the big things that happened to me in my life was when I got in touch with the idea of wanting to be one of the people, you know, one of the people. And that didn't mean, you know, part of a shivering mass or something. It meant a distinct individual who was making their contribution, you know, and sometimes excelling or being something specific. And sometimes being unrecognizable because of so many other people, you know.
Well, how did all this?
There's a kind of feeling that I like, and that I'm engaged in a search for indefinable things, and I also know that there are a lot of other people engaged in searches for, you know, other kinds of things or the same things, and I feel very comfortable with that feeling. I don't, you know, I know that in some ways I will excel, but I might be the only person who knew about it, mm-hmm. but it doesn't bother me anymore.
Well,
it really doesn't.
How do these things, because I identify a lot with what you're saying, because I think I'm going through a similar kind of thing. But one of the things that I think about sometimes is, and I came out of a political bag too, as you probably know, and I wonder, okay, I begin to see that the important things are developing myself as a person and trying to find out who I am, and those are my accomplishments. Okay, then how do you stop people from stepping on your head as a woman? How do you stop people from stepping on your head as a lesbian? One of the things I found by running into the great patriarchy and trying to spread the truth is that all I got from my pains was anguish, mm-hmm. I still want to change the world, but I've come around to the notion that the way to change is by changing myself first.
I think there are two things to that, Ron. One is that you're talking in very binary terms. You're saying you're either political or cultural in that sense. And I still step back in for political acts, but I feel in some ways like I've done my time politically. I've given 3 or 4 years concentrated of my life to civil rights struggles, to feminism. I still, like with the Feminist Community Coalition and other actions, am a political person, but one of the other ways about self-indulgence that we haven't talked or in about getting back into yourself that we haven't talked about, and that's becoming very important to me recently, is the mind-body dichotomy, which is very patriarchal, and that my head has been split, my political head has been split off from my body, and a lot of, not talking in sexual terms, but in my sense of the wholeness of myself for a long time. And one of the other important parts of radical feminism and feminism that I'm seeing is, it's kind of fun, it's the idea that feminists say we're going to save the world, which we are, if somebody will give us about an inch, or if we take the inch, but that often we're very cruel to our own bodies. And I read recently somebody was talking about taking better care of your goddess farm, which is your body, that you're growing a goddess, was one way of describing it, and that you should be kinder to yourself. So in very even physical terms, whether it's eating better or exercising or remembering things, some of our remembering rituals, I'm beginning to get tied back into one whole person again, and that's a very important part of my time and energy right now, is devoted to reconnecting my mind and my body into one whole responsive person, and that I only have time for some kinds of politics now, and the question of how do you survive if no one is doing those politics, I think other people are in that process, and that they will ultimately step into places, and I know a lot of women now who are just becoming political, let's say, who haven't been political before, and hopefully they'll do some of that kind of work. I feel like I'm doing other kinds of work that's extremely political. It's just not in the context that you and I and Doris and Carol, to some degree, Carol also with Cowrie, have worked in what is consciously seen as political. That every action of mine is extraordinarily political, whether it's United Feathers in our beach party or whatever.
I definitely have that sense too. Definitely. As a matter of fact, I think the danger of being too political in the old sense of the word is that you get very caught up in trying to get various institutions all patriarchal, to recognize you and yield so that you feel that you have some, made some accomplishment or something like that. And
it's an impossible goal, you know, really, to get the patriarchy
well,
to
think,
recognize you.
You know, that's a lot of what lesbian separatism is about, is
right.
that even if it isn't on a conscious level, there is an awareness underneath that that really isn't the road to go. You know, that you
yeah,
try to
it's very,
create some alternative.
But isn't it true that
right.
rather than try to make pitiful little changes in the mess that exists?
Isn't it true, though, that if there hadn't been a women's movement and if there hadn't been a gay movement, that the chances of people like you getting together and trying to find out the more personal, more important to you now things would have been harder to do? I mean, one of the things I think about is people listening to this show, and where do they go, for example, to talk to other women, to begin to explore the kinds of things that you people are exploring? There have to be. Can they just do that by just sitting down with some other women they know, or are there places that they can go to?
I think the best resource, if we're going to get
well,
very
there are
practical.
Plenty of places they can go. Yeah, they can go to Lesbian Feminist Liberation. That's a very important organization. I had some incredible experiences in that group, which changed my life.
But isn't that a more political organization?
It's both political and social.
Everything is political. Anytime lesbians get together, there's something political about it, I guarantee it. Because the political thing that's happening that's most important, I think, is our changes inside ourselves, and not whether we pass a law or something like that. It's how we feel about ourselves. You know. Then we live our lives differently. And
but it's hard for people to do that by themselves. And what I'm trying to get at is
a community.
How does a woman who is listening to this program who doesn't know any other lesbians
and
thinking this way, mm-hmm. where do they go and how do they find something?
The Majority Report is sold at almost most major newsstands, and in it it has every resource available within the feminist and lesbian feminist communities. And to just read one or two issues of that, I think you can pick out the kind of organization that you feel most comfortable in. And there's everything across the spectrum. I was talking about the Feminist Coalition. There's 65 feminist-identified organizations in New York City, from everything from Jewish feminists to black feminists to anarchist feminists to National Organization for Women, which is a very good entry place for a lot of women. And it's where I started. and I gained a lot of really rich experience from the National Organization for Women and Lesbian Feminist Liberation. And in Majority Report, every day there are 23 feminist-oriented kinds of things happening, from self-help clinics to more very highly intellectual theory-oriented kinds of groups.
WBAI New York.
So I think that answers the question. It is really the answer to the question of where do women go. I think they choose for themselves where they go by virtue of seeing what kind of selection of groups they have.
Do you think that there's some special thing that lesbian feminists are thinking about and doing and contributing to the world that just plain old feminists are not doing? Is it possible for a woman to get the kind of awareness and consciousness in a strictly feminist group without getting together with other lesbians or with
lesbians? One thing lesbians are doing that I like a lot is they're helping to destroy the old humanitarian foundations that a lot of things have been built on, and which imply, you know, there's a lot of guilt and humanitarian kinds of feelings. It's like, at one point I wanted to go around with a magic fairy wand and say, you're not guilty for Vietnam, and you're not guilty for war, and you're not guilty for, you know, people starving to death, because women haven't been guilty, women haven't done anything. And I think they're starting, that's part of separatism,
well, some
too.
Some people feel guilty for not doing it.
Well, that's, you know, women aren't in power. So, and the people who are in power are men, and they are restrained from doing anything. They can only do things in a very, very low level, which is really nice, because then they can put all their energy into that, and men can go out and destroy it again. But I think that's part of separatism, too, is women getting together and starting to think of themselves almost exclusively, and when they start thinking of themselves, they get into other things, like women in communes are really into ecology. you know, they want to save themselves, they want to save the earth, and then they, you know, it's a chain that goes on and on and on, where your interests are. And women aren't naturally just going to sit around and hug themselves and say, you know, like, I'm just terrific and I've just got to save myself. All the women that I've met are always reaching out for something. They want something. They have so many desires, and they are constantly reaching out, and this is part of our conflict, because part of the desires are conditioned, you know, by the way we grew up, that we're supposed to want certain things, and if we don't want that and we want something else, then we have a lot of conflict. But women are constantly reaching out, and they're helping themselves first now, and then the things that they're interested in. Humanitarianism is very bad for women.
Well, I take it that you're saying that, at least at this point in history, it is important for women to think of their own needs and
to
make their own discoveries as to what they want.
Absolutely. Who is going to tell us if we don't tell ourselves?
Is there a future for humanism?
Then we have to get into that, you know, and that's a whole other thing.
Humanism cannot exist in a patriarchy. Men and women cannot be equal, as many humanists. I've heard a lot of wonderful humanist debates with radical feminists, and the humanists rarely do very well because their basic presumption of is equality within a patriarchy, equality of men and women within the existing institutions, which is insane, because all the institutions of the culture, from religion to education to whatever, are thoroughly the result of male thinking. And one of the things that lesbian feminists are doing that's prophetic for the culture, we're doing many things, I think, but one of the things is even getting into the whole nature of thinking. Do women think more in a circular kind of sense? There are investigations of the right brain, left brain kind of concept. The left brain is analytical, the right brain is more creative, the left brain is been associated with male thinking. How do we begin to use that part of our thinking processes that we've been cut off from for a long time? The results of a lot of this probing could result in totally different patterns of people relating internally to themselves and certainly to the world. And it's far beyond sex role stereotyping. You had said in your introduction that one of our major problems was that we live in a patriarchy. I see the fact that we live in a patriarchy to be our major problem, not one of them. I can't think of any problem I have that's not related to the fact that I'm living under a male-dominated, male-dominated isn't even a big enough word anymore, male-designed culture.
You're living in a predatory community. That's what you're living in, and you're not the predator.
Well, yeah, and as Les Shanklin would say, a warrior culture.
Yeah, I like that very much.
The thing is that I agree with everything you're saying. What the only thing that bothers me about it, of course, is that one can assign that to what you call male thinking, because I don't think that way. I don't want to think that way, and I know a lot of other men who don't think that way.
Are they gay?
Most of them are
the people who are the most oppressed by it, and those happen to be women. You
know? Well, there's no question about that. But what I think, at least my interpretation of what I hear there, and I sort of don't like to bring myself into it, but I guess I will at this point, is that when you say male thinking, what I think you really mean is just rotten, ignorant, immoral thinking.
No, I mean male thinking.
Say that if you want to, but just let me finish. I think that it's absolutely essential for women to get together and discover the kinds of things they're discovering in order to change the world. I think that women will.
And in order to have pleasure, our only goal isn't to change the world.
Right.
Our first goal is to have a lot of fun.
Change the world so we can live.
And as we're enjoying real, authentic kinds of pleasures in ourselves, that if the day when two women, for instance, can really love each other is the day that the revolution will have been accomplished, because you have two self-hating people together in a patriarchy. Women have been taught that they're contemptible within the culture. And the day that I can be truly loving with another woman and authentically loving, then that's the day that we would have achieved this revolution. And so the process that we're in, that's another reason of the importance of the lesbian feminist quest, or whatever you would want to call it.
That would be true. I find that absolutely true, that day will mean that we've accomplished the revolution, but it also implicit in your statement is that it's possible for men and women to love each other, and I don't think that's true.
How is that implicit?
I mean, I think that people don't love each other, and when we can discover how to love each other, then we'll win. And maybe the only way we can is by doing that as gay men and as lesbians, because we're too hung up in a society that's told us how we're supposed to be as men and women. But saying that the all of these ignorant and immoral things that you're talking about are the products of male thinking doesn't seem to me to solve
but
the problem.
But they are, because you can't separate it out.
Obviously, destruction of society is a product of male thinking because men devised it. Now,
we have to think of where they devised it out of.
Certainly,
and you have to think of where, you know,
women didn't have a hand in creating the kinds of societies that we have today.
Men hate women, and they hate men who act like women or in some way take any kind of woman's role or relate to other men as a man and woman kind of couple. I mean, they hate women. I mean, all these right-thinking men who are the heads of nations and the heads of churches and all through the years hate women. They have taught everyone to hate women.
Now, let's go back to the primal reason why men would do this.
Yeah, well, you can't say, I'm just talking about, you can't say that the it's not male thinking, it's immoral or corrupt or evil thinking or anything like that. It is male thinking because it comes from that, from hating women. Now, why men hate women, there are a lot of different theories on it. You know, there are a lot of different, I personally like the theory of men and women being different species. I like that a lot. And that's something I would like to go with later, which I haven't explored.
I'm afraid you're not going to get a chance because we've got about 2 minutes left. So maybe we could sort of try to wind up with at least some more of a very specific kind of, if we can, personal statement from each of you of just where you are in terms of how important it's been for you to relate to other women as opposed to where you might have been before you got into that, if we could end with that.
Yeah. Well, with me, once I was touched with the idea of feminism and began to question all the things that you would question when you come in contact with feminist thought, it set off a chain reaction, and I began to question everything, every conditioning that I could be aware of. Every time my instinct began to not feel comfortable with what I had always accepted, I began to examine it. And so this has set me into a whole area of examining the kind of government we live with and how can feminism, or how can a lesbian live in that kind of society? And I've realized that they really can't, and that it has to be changed. And so it set me on. I'm now an anarchist, you know. And you know, I wish we had time to explain anarchism because it isn't, you know, irresponsibility or anything like that. But it's. I believe in the neutralization of power rather than the grasping of power. I think when people learn that it's in their interest to refuse power and only to maintain power over their own lives, that then we will be able to love each other.
Could we end on that note? Because we really don't have the time. And I want to thank you all very much. My guests today have been Jan Crawford, Carol Harden, and Doris London. And the subject has been lesbian separatism. If you have any comments about this show or suggestions for future shows, please write to Gay Alternatives, care of WBAI, 359 East 62nd Street, New York, 10021. My name is Ronald Gold, and I'll be back next week at the same time.